You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. For Food Friday today, we're joined by one of the foodiest food people around, Christopher Kimball.
Milk Street is a hub for good food with a television show, cooking classes, and a radio show, which you can hear Sundays at 10 a.m. on Wisconsin Public Radio. Kimball is out to spread the word about new style home cooking that he says is simpler and smarter, yet still familiar.
Christopher Kimball joins us to talk about his new cookbook. It's called Milk Street, The New Home Cooking. Chris, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Your new cookbook is about what you call the new home cooking. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Sure, in 30 words or less. it simply means that there are lots of answers to the question, what's for dinner? And at Milk Street, we're traveling around the world to cook with people, not fancy restaurants, but at home, to rethink how to cook at home. Most of American cooking traditionally, Fanny Farmer was Northern European, French, English, et cetera. But other people in the world have very different ideas about how to cook and how to combine ingredients. And we think you end up with big, bold flavors, and it's pretty easy to do. So that's the new home cooking.
And you start out your book with a really interesting concept, I think, that the realization that there's no such thing as ethnic cooking. Explain that for us.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of ethnic cooking. Back in the 50s and 60s when I was growing up, there was a lot of discussion about ethnic culture and foods. And so these were fancy recipes in general. Everyone was trying to be authentic. And you'd spend all day Saturday making them, right? and it was always our food kind of versus their food, We didn't integrate the two. They were just separate worlds. So once a month you might cook a authentic Indian dish or Mexican dish or Sichuan dish. I think now it's changed. The music and fashion worlds have certainly changed the game now. So the concept is home cooks from around the world all sit at this really big table, and we're all doing the same thing. We're putting dinner on the table, and it's not our food versus their food. It's just food. If you live in Mexico City, do you cook mole sauce every night? No. You probably cook pasta. You might cook Turkish food. You might cook a Sichuan dish. So it's not our food and their food. It's just food. And let's not worry about the fancy stuff. Let's just cook dinner on a Tuesday night and do it together. So that's what I meant by that.
And your book, it draws from recipes around the world and dishes from around the world. So when you've got the whole world to pick from, how do you do it?
Well, I just got off a call with someone in Taiwan a few minutes ago, and we had exactly that discussion for 45 minutes. And the things you pick are the things that are simpler, the things that don't involve really hard-to-find ingredients, although we use a larger palette of ingredients than I did 5 years ago, and things that I call bridge recipes, things that, would work here. You can take a Chinese scallion pancake, and turn it into something that works here. You can take a beef noodle soup and turn it into something that works here. You can take a braised chicken dish from Taiwan that has a couple of interesting ingredients in it and make it work here. Those things work. Lots of other things don't because they're unique to a place. They're complicated. They're part of the culture, and they don't really travel.
You talked about ingredients, and let's dig into that. Let's go into the pantry. What do we need to stock in the pantry to be ready to cook?
Well, here is one of my revelations, which, wasn't brilliant. It came to me late. But, I've cooked out of Mastering Out of French Cooking since it came out almost. And I was thinking, how many spices were used in that book? Almost none. How many herbs? Four or five, with the small amounts. How many chilies? None. How much ginger? None. How much fermented sauce? So the world has at its disposal in different places all sorts of big flavors, right? So I would say there are four or five spices you should have. You don't have to go crazy. Cumin and coriander being sort of the two. Smoked paprika, maybe turmeric, maybe a different kind of pepper. but cumin certainly in the Middle East is the black pepper of the Middle East. They use salt and cumin, not salt and pepper. So half a dozen spices. A good soy sauce and a good fish sauce are really helpful. And having some dried chilies around, you know, which you can get at almost any supermarket these days, like a New Mexico chili, which isn't that spicy, is great. And then, you know, when you go shopping, buy, you know, some lots of herbs. We just did a recipe here that had 2 cups of cilantro, 2 cups of parsley, and 1 cup of dill. So just by upping the amount of herbs you use, you can completely change a recipe. For example, lots of places in the world when they do chicken soup, they'll throw in a couple handfuls of herbs at the end. Handfuls. So it's not always a question of having something different. It's just using more of it.
Well, and speaking of herbs, you've got a recipe in here for a Persian omelet, which we used to have a place nearby that we loved. Both Judith and I were remembering how much we loved
a cuckoo sabzi.
It's cuckoo, yes.
Let's say it together. Right,
well,
and you've got a recipe.
That's the recipe I just mentioned that has the dill and the parsley and the cilantro. You know, it has 6 eggs in it, a few spices. I think it has cardamom, cinnamon, and maybe cumin. And that's the thing that, you know, cinnamon, for example, is used throughout the Middle East, but it's used in savory cooking. You know, you always see the sweet, warm spice, allspice cinnamon, with a cumin or coriander. It's a nice, or in kofta, you know, essentially the meatballs of the Middle East, North Africa, like in Turkey, they often put cinnamon in that. So, it's not so much having this huge array of stuff in your pantry, it's just using it differently.
I have to say, I make a cinnamon chicken recipe that has tomatoes and onions and garlic and white wine and bay leaves. And when I first saw it, I was really skeptical because I do have the American conception of cinnamon. Yep. And I love it. It's one of my go-to recipes.
There's a Vietnamese beef noodle soup we did a few months ago, which has a lot of cinnamon sticks in it. And it's just unbelievably good. And that's, you know, if you think about French cooking or Northern European cooking, much of which is fabulous. But it has fairly mild ingredients, and a lot of technique and time and heat is applied to it to come up with a dish that is, you know, for the most part, a melting pot, right? I mean, a beef stew, everything tastes like beef. A chicken soup, everything tastes like chicken. Other places in the world have a totally different point of view. Their concept is when you taste something, they're sweet and sour or sweet and hot, and there's creamy and crunchy. There's bitter. You know, there's chard. There are other things we don't do much with here. And so there's a lot of stuff going on. And as you said, the cinnamon with savory is just an interesting, counterpoint to what we normally have. So what constitutes cooking in other places in the world is actually more complex. It's not harder. It's just that even on the fifth bite, you know, you have that heat going and that sweet going. For example, if you cook with chilies and you want to balance the dish, add sugar. Sugar will actually take the heat down and make it more flavorful. So those are just some of the things we're trying to get at here, is to figure out the theory of it, you know, what's going on in the recipe, not just the ingredients.
We're talking to Chris Kimball right now. He's the author of Milk Street, The New Home Cooking. And you were mentioning beef stews, Chris, and you've got a recipe for one of these. You say you can use beef or lamb, but the kicker is it's no-sear beef or lamb and chickpea stew. Can you tell us what's special about that one?
Yeah, there are two things I learned in that recipe. One is use water. If you simmer chicken or beef or lamb in water, you get stock, right? You don't need to start with stock. Stock was designed for a stove, coal stove, for example, that was on all day, and you put a big pot on the back burner, you know, where it's not that hot, and you just throw all your trimmings in all day, right? So it made a lot of sense. But if you do beef stew or beef soup with beef stock and sauté the meat, you get a umami bomb. You get the extra umami from the sautéing. You get the extra umami from the beef stock. In that recipe, which I love, I've made it a dozen times, you get a balance. There's herbs, there are spices, there's a pound of meat, I think, or a pound and a half, not too much, the chickpeas. You know, you get a lot of things going on. You don't let the meat overpower the dish. You know, America is all about protein, right? And so is Northern Europe, because meat was cheap. There was a lot of meat, and there's a lot of fuel. And so we're meat-heavy. The rest of the world, meat, today, even today, is expensive, so they use it more sparingly, and I think you end up with a more interesting dish as a result.
There are so many great recipes in this book. One that really caught my attention is the brown butter cardamom banana bread.
Oh, yeah.
I love cardamom.
Same here.
And we should be cooking together more often, clearly, Veronica. And you do use cardamom quite a bit in the book. What do you like about it, Chris?
Well, one of the most interesting uses of cardamom is in the Middle East, like in Jerusalem or Palestine, where they brew coffee with it. They grind cardamom up with the coffee beans. And it's just amazing. I mean, cardamom has, I think, maybe other than saffron, has the most unusual flavor. And it could go savory and go sweet. And it's just an amazing flavor. And I don't like black cardamom too much. That's a very different taste. But the green cardamom pods or white pods, if they're blanched, it's just a wonderful flavor. And you can just use it in almost anything. I mean, that's really so interesting. You know, if you just add that little bit of cinnamon or that cardamom or a little cumin, you completely transform a dish. And Americans, not all Americans, but I grew up really without spices, right? I mean, nutmeg, cinnamon, allspice, whatever, salt and pepper, which is a weird combination, salt and pepper. We never cooked with cardamom or cumin or coriander or turmeric or paprika or other things. And so just doing that, just adding a few of those things. Most places in the world, especially in the Middle East, they have spice blends like za'atar, or in Palestine they'll make up their own blends. And those blends, the Japanese have blends. So almost every culture has a spice blend. And just having a couple of spice blends, there's a joke in Boston, a chef who has a restaurant called Olean, a Turkish restaurant. She always told me, I said, what's the secret to your success? And she says, well, the T-shirt should be, it's the za'atar, stupid, you know, like the Clinton campaign back in the 90s. And she just says, she just puts za'atar on everything. You put it on eggs, you put it on chicken. And it's true. I have a tin of spices I keep on my kitchen counter. You know, in India they have these tins, and inside they're smaller tins holding spices. And I have some couple Japanese blends. I have za'atar and dukkha and then some chilies and salt. And just all you have to do is start using that, and your cooking is transformed. It's really not that hard.
And Chris, as we wrap up, now that the season is changing, what is your favorite thing to cook for the colder weather? What are you excited about?
Well, my wife is half Austrian. Her mother's from Salzburg, and we go almost every year. And I discovered a dish there. It's like pot au feu. It's called Tafelspitz. It's usually a beef roast or two beef roast shoulder, and it's essentially boiled meat, which I know nobody thinks is sounds good, but you simmer it for like 3 hours, take it out when it's tender, and then cook some vegetables in it. And then you can serve it with horseradish or salsa verde, whatever you want. It's the world's easiest recipe. The thing is, you know, we used to boil meat. Boiling was the first way to cook food, right, or one of the first ways after just over a fire. And the texture is wonderful, and it's clean. It just has a wonderful, subtle flavor. And so every time we want people over in the winter, it's Tafelspitz time. You just get a couple, 3 or 4 pound roasts, cover them with water and simmer them for the afternoon. And then, you know, put fennel in, potatoes, carrots, whatever you want. You're done. I mean, it's easy, and it's really good, and it makes a fabulous lunch as well.
Well, you've got our mouths watering. Chris, thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
My pleasure.
That was Christopher Kimball. His new book is called Milk Street, The New Home Cooking.